The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to The Potterverse. It's a podcast dedicated to the book and film universe of Harry Potter. So grab your favorite wands and time turners and let's step into the night and pursue that flighty temptress adventure. Welcome back. My name is Mary Larson.
My name is Blake, and I am questioning the security of the Gringotts Bank.
Oh, okay.
A little bit of questions here.
All right.
Molly just shows up and says, yeah, I'm taking some money out.
Oh, I'm like, are you not talking about the Quidditch World Cup? I'm understanding. Understanding where you're at. Yeah, Molly taking out some money for
she
Harry.
She just shows up, says, give me a couple hundred galleons. Got to buy some books.
Hey.
Got to buy some robes.
Why not, right?
And they're like, yeah, sure, yeah.
Just throwing Harry Potter's
again,
money around.
It goes back, it always comes back to the Godfather. It's Frankie Pantangeli. Yeah. Sure.
In my opinion, Molly Weasley is listed as one of the people who can go into it. Probably she asked Harry at some point, you know, I mean, does he have a legal guardian? He has the Dursleys, but they don't necessarily go into Gringotts. So maybe she said, can I be your bank legal guardian? Can I be a person who has signed on to this? And they probably already covered that in the private time that we didn't read about. Because exactly. You can't just walk into someone else's bank. You know, we can't just walk it. We know this.
I'm his best friend's mom.
The goblins take it seriously.
I'm his best friend's mom, so give me this money.
Like yeah, I'm a mom in general. So. Just trust me.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm maternal, right?
Well, on that note, we are here delving into chapter 10 of The Goblet of Fire. Did you put your name in The Goblet of Fire? We are on Mayhem at the Ministry. I thought they'd bring out the color of your eyes, dear, said Mrs. Weasley finally. Well, they're okay, said Ron angrily, looking at Harry's robe. Why couldn't I have something like that? Because, well, I had to get your second hand, and there wasn't a lot of choice, said Mrs. Weasley, flushing. Harry looked away. He would have willingly split all of the money in his Gringotts vault with the Weasleys, which Mrs. Weasley was already in, but he knew that they would never take it. I'm never wearing them, Ron said stubbornly. Never! Fine, snapped Mrs. Weasley. Go naked, and Harry, make sure you take a picture of him. Goodness knows I could do with a laugh.
Oh.
I feel like we needed that.
Yes, I know.
From Molly Weasley in this chapter. Goodness knows Molly Weasley needs a laugh. Well, before we delve into this chapter, we wanted to remind you that the Potterverse is brought to you by MinuteWithMary.com. In addition to loving all things Potter, I also love to play with makeup and skincare. And even if you're watching this video and you're like, Mary, you do not have a stitch of makeup on your face. It's true. It's summertime and...
Wait, can makeup be stitch?
What?
Can makeup be stitched? Like...
Ew.
You just said
like
you don't have a stitch. You don't have a stitch of makeup.
I don't have a bit. How about that?
There you go. A bit
of
sure.
makeup. I don't have a bit of makeup
An
on
ounce.
Me.
Ounce.
An ounce of makeup. None of it whatsoever, but I do have on skincare.
Yes.
So if you are a makeup minimalist and you're like, I love Mary and I would love to support her, but I don't do makeup, I got you, boo. I've got eye creams and lotions and lotioning and oiling. And for our Sandlot friends out there, I got you.
Take it
just
anymore.
Search the hashtag MinuteWithMary on social media, particularly Instagram or Facebook. Send me a little message. I would love to hook you up.
I solemnly swear that I'm up to no good.
Well, this chapter, the Weasleys and future Weasley family members, get that up,
oh.
Harry and Hermione are. They head on back to the Burrow. Harry does tell Ron and Hermione about the dream that he had that awoke him and made his scar hurt. Mr. Weasley is really upset because Rita Skeeter is writing all this trash talk about the ministry in the Daily Prophet. And everybody who is young, they're gearing up to head on. Got to get back to Hogwarts, man.
Gotta get Choo-choo. Back to Hogwarts.
Not at all the pitches, but we're okay with that. We are totally okay with that.
I'm Harry freaking Potter.
You're welcome for the musical reference.
So this, of course, literally just takes place the day after the Quidditch World Cup. Arthur Weasley bippity-boppity-booed that tent and everything they had and got the heck out of Dodge as quickly as possible. Were you shocked that they actually spent the night there?
Absolutely. If this was my family, I am getting out of there as fast as possible. Though, there is somewhat of an argument, and I would love to hear your thoughts on this.
Okay.
That actually might be the safest place that you can be.
Tell me more.
Because you got all them wizards there. You got all. I bet you got a bunch of Aurors. I bet you they're there hanging out. I bet you a bunch of the ministry people are there hanging out, trying to find out information. And they, I mean, like the investigative process probably has to remain intact, so everything has to remain the same. Like, you can't just go touching crap.
This is where, once again, the future knowledge of Sidelong Apparition really would have come in handy. Arthur could have just been like, everybody wait here. Ginny, hold on. Brrrp. Burp. Okay, everyone, still wait here. Ron, hold on. Burp, burp. Like, could have been that quick.
Yes.
But alas, we don't do that yet.
I don't think the author knew about that.
We don't do that just yet, I don't think. So, and it is. It's just mayhem. I mean, it's so much mayhem that when they do wake up before the crack of dawn, because they actually get to the burrow as the sun is rising,
yes.
So they wake up at like 3 a.m. or something.
Sure.
There's lines to get a portkey to bring them on back.
So that goes to show you that probably everybody's ready to get the hell out of Dodge.
Yeah. And it makes you wonder, too, were people already trying to leave that night?
Yeah, that's probably why there's lines.
And they said, you know what? We're not going to go right away because we know that there's going to be hours-long wait.
Yep.
It's going to be like waiting for Hagrid's motorcycle
right out of my mouth
at Universal, which Blake and I waited in 8 hours in line to ride because it was the opening
eight
season.
Frackin' hours.
Please, friends, never wait that long for a ride. It's never going to be that good.
It'll never be 8 hours good. It'll never be 4 hours good.
I mean, maybe in my younger years I could have done it, but I was crabby.
We saw kids puking.
No joke. I was as crabby as creature.
We saw some guys, some kids.
Filthy mudbloods vomiting all over Hagrid's hut.
It was just so hot. Nobody had any money. They didn't have any drinks. There was no water.
No water.
It was just hot and muggy
miserable.
And gross.
Miserable.
This is the most miserable experience of my life.
So Arthur Weasley having the foresight to say, you know what? We're all going to take a little napski.
Yep. Going to get a little
while
sleep.
The kids are sleeping, I'm going to just pack things up. Use my little wand and pippity pack.
Sure.
And then wake them all up a couple hours later.
Yep.
Touch some, I forget what they used, what kind of portkey they used.
It was the Rubbataya.
Yes, Rubbataya this time. And then they had to go through a lot. They got back to the hill before the sun had risen.
Mm-hmm.
They walked through Ottery, St. Catchpole, and up the damp lane toward the burrow in the dawn light. Oh, can you imagine?
Nope.
Like that being your night, just walking in the dark after this really scary thing just happened.
No way.
Was it a quiet walk or a talkative walk?
That's a quiet walk. I mean, you're up at 3 a.m. and like you're not sure what's going on. And you don't know if like there's other Death Eaters out there just waiting for you. That's a quiet walk.
Yeah, right.
I'm not saying a word. I get my head like it's on a swivel.
You know that Arthur Weasley, when he touched that, when he got up to the portkey, he's like, please don't have talkative Amos Diggory next to me.
Right. I don't want to deal with Diggory.
My kids all know the rule.
Yeah.
If it's before the sun, it's
shut
a quiet
up.
Walk. Amos Diggory doesn't know that rule though, right? Amos Diggory.
No, all he does is talk. Talking about his kid, talking about this, talking about talk. Diggory. I'm out on Diggory.
And then out comes Molly Weasley, who joked was like, this is going to be the greatest thing ever. All of my kids and my husband are going away. I'm going to go shopping in Diagon Alley. It's girls' day, mani pedis.
Yeah.
And instead, she had such a fright. Such a fright. Her clock was probably just on mortal peril until they came home.
Yep.
Yeah.
You're all right, Mrs. Weasley muttered distractedly, releasing Mr. Weasley and staring around at all of them with red eyes. You're alive. Oh, boys. And to everybody's surprise, she sees Fred and George and pulled them both into such a tight hug that their heads banged together.
Ouch.
Ouch, Mom, you're strangling us. I shouted at you before you left, Mrs. Weasley said, starting to sob. It's all I've been thinking about. What if you know who had got you? And the last thing I ever said to you is that you didn't get enough OWLs. Oh, Fred, George. come on now, Molly. We're all perfectly okay. Oh, goodness gracious. I love this. I love this because I feel like this is a real genuine moment for Molly Weasley.
Where yes.
You just, you know, you have this experience and it's an awful experience. And you go back to the last thing you said to the person and it's about freaking owls. Like, get out of here.
But we've all been there. You know, it's so funny because I don't know about you all, but sometimes I just aimlessly scroll social media. Sometimes it makes me feel good. Sometimes it doesn't. It's okay.
I'd say most of the time it doesn't.
I would agree. But there was something that I scrolled the other day, and I've heard this said so many times about, like, what if everyone spoke to you in real life the way that they would speak about you at your funeral? What if everyone, you know how all those big funeral speeches, oh my gosh, Blake, he was the most amazing husband, he was the most amazing father, he did this, he did that,
thank you, Mary.
I mean, I appreciate you. But exactly. So they, you know, it was this just quote saying, like, say this to them now, say it to them on their birthdays, call them up.
Sure.
You know, don't miss these moments. And this is what goes through poor Molly Weasley's head. Gosh, any person's head when peril strikes, you know, possible peril strikes.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
You think about when you fly. You and I always tell each other, I love you. Like, right before we fly, it's the last thing we say
never
or text,
fails.
Right? Because God forbid, if we don't land the plane.
Yeah, land. Sorry. I gotta find it.
Land the plane, Helen. That's what we want our last thing to be said to each other, right?
Yeah, right.
So here's Molly. She chose poorly.
She chose poorly.
With her last words. She didn't know.
She didn't know. We get our first mention of Rita Skeeter.
Ooh.
Rita Skeeter.
Your cousin from Boston.
Now, of course, Blake Larson has never read The Goblet of Fire.
I've never read The Goblet
of
Fire.
And several of you who are tuning in, you may not have. But we generally share spoilers in these podcasts.
Yes.
And for those of us who have read this book, we know that Rita's going to be around with us for a while. Just popping in here, there, flying in here, there, one may say, because, you know.
She's a bug.
Rita's a bug.
She's a beetle, isn't she?
Yeah, little bug, little beetle.
Whatever.
She's
sure.
A little lippity-boppity-boo.
Yeah.
So it's just interesting because she starts to, dare I say, bug you in this chapter with the things that she says. And it's, you know,
here's the thing,
we trust Arthur, we trust his judgment.
Here's the thing, is she wrong? I mean, there weren't bodies
about vampires,
no, but they're just, she was calling out the.
But for her saying that there were bodies dragged out of the woods, there is a body dragged out. Once again, spoilerific, here we go. Barty Crouch Jr.'s stunned body, which Blake has learned, even though he hasn't read about that part yet. So she's not particularly wrong. No.
That's what I'm getting at. So, like,
she's not wrong.
I'm seeing Rita get a lot of hate here. I'm seeing it. And the thing is, she's not that wrong.
No.
Not that wrong.
Rita gets to be everywhere. Because of how she can switch, you know what I mean? She's an animagus. She can switch into bug form and just knows a lot of things, bugs a lot of people. Lots of times she's wrong. Lots of times she elaborates. I do love how Percy goes off that, like, you know, she doesn't care about cauldron thickness and wants us stamping out vampires. And, you know, like, that's his way of getting in there. Just needs to ring it on home about the cauldron thickness.
Yeah.
You know, that
everyone's
is so,
like,
important.
Everyone's just, poor Percy. Everyone just rags. Everyone's, Bill says, Percy, would you just shut up?
Yeah.
Would you stop talking? Get out of here. You know, like, that poor kid. That poor kid's always the butt of the joke.
You know, and then Arthur is somewhat loosely quoted. And he must have had, like, a big sigh of relief. They're like, whew, she didn't put my name in it. But, of course, saying a ministry official, you know, try to give some information and that nobody was hurt,
right?
You know, so he knows that he has to go do some cleaning up. And Percy gives him flack for this too.
Right.
Percy rails into, oh, well, Dad shouldn't have been blabbing his mouth everywhere.
So, you know, this is why I don't feel so bad for Percy, because Percy, he deserves it. He absolutely deserves it, because he's just that class pet that thinks he's right all the time and tries to do everything right all the time. And he thinks that he don't stink. And I can't stand that.
What's funny, though, is, of course, the way that I get it is I feel like Percy has always been this way. He's always wanted to be the class pet. Here he is kind of stuck right in the middle of all these Weasleys.
Yep.
You know, true middle child syndrome. Oh, I mean, yeah. God bless him.
You look it up, and it's Percy's
middle
face.
Middle children unite. I am right there with you. You are the performers. You try to be loud and proud. You try to win all the awards because nobody cares about you. Everyone's forgotten about you. So Percy is trying not to be forgotten his entire life. And yet what I love in this chapter is his parents never respond. Like, he's like, oh yeah, I hate Reader Skeeter. She doesn't care about my cauldrons. And Arthur just changes the subject.
Yeah, it just keeps going.
Arthur's
on.
Like, Molly, I gotta go to the office. I gotta go do something. I'll come with you, Father, because, you know, I'm gonna go see Mr. Crouch. No, nothing. Arthur doesn't say great, doesn't say yes, come along. It's just like,
Mrs. Weasley looked most upset after Percy says this. Arthur, you're supposed to be on holiday. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mention anything about Percy, nothing.
No. He's just the wind. It's the middle child. Like, did you speak? Oh,
sorry.
You weren't the youngest, you weren't the oldest. You're also not Harry Potter, so I really don't care.
You just are nothing. You're nothing in my life.
Speaking of something that isn't nothing, though, is Harry does open up to Ron and Hermione. He feels like, now's a good time. The world's getting a little crazy.
But he doesn't open up fully. He does a little bit. He says his scar was hurting, and it's probably not a coincidence that his scar hurts, and 3 days later, all these Death Eaters show up, taking up residence at the Quidditch World Cup. But he doesn't say that his dream was about him.
Correct.
What is this to you? Is this Harry still trying to not upset the apple cart, or is this Harry trying to avoid, like, just not pretend that it didn't happen, but just avoid the reality?
Well, I think he knows his friends really well.
So this feels like a coping mechanism to me.
I think he's just trying to protect Hermione.
In what
you know,
way?
It even says he teetered for a moment on the verge of saying me, but couldn't bring himself to make Hermione look any more horrified than she already did.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
So I think, you know, he kind of played it out in his head when he had the dream. Oh, I bet this is what Ron would do. I think this is what Hermione would suggest. And he starts to tell them. And it says Ron and Hermione's reactions were almost exactly as Harry had imagined them back in his bedroom on Privet Drive. Mm-hmm. So I think Harry knows his friends well enough that if he says, oh, and they were talking about killing me, that it will cause immense anguish and fear for Hermione. And she's going to take him down all these different paths that he may not be ready for.
Absolutely.
He's almost like, I don't necessarily see it as him protecting himself or him trying to pretend it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. I see it as like, I know that she's just going to take this and run with it, and I don't know if I'm ready for it yet.
Sure.
Because I want to hear back from Sirius first. I just kind of want to, like, dip my toes into this because it's about me.
And because Hermione does have a tendency to run with things. I mean, like, look at the whole thing with Winky and Barty Crouch Sr. and how she is already shrilly yelling, as it's later on said, about how that's his slave and she's not paid. And I mean, she's running with this thing.
Yeah.
And it's like all of a sudden she is taken to this cause.
Harry really tries to trust his own insight, and it doesn't always work out. But what I love about this is right after he starts to go into what Professor Trelawney predicted last year, mm-hmm. and he knows her prediction was real. He knows that it was done in a different voice. He knows that what she said did come true. Mm-hmm. So, and neither Ron nor Hermione really listened to this bit. Hermione's like, oh, whatever, Professor Trelawney, like, if she's, you know, kooky, it's totally loopy. Like, she's fine. I don't worry about it. So Harry is trying to put some of these puzzle pieces in his own head together, not necessarily always listening to his friends. Would it have been better for him to tell everything? Probably. I kind of think that's like the moral of the Harry Potter story. You should trust your friends, but it doesn't always happen.
I like how it's written here. Hermione's terrified look vanished as she let out a derisive snort. Oh, Harry, you're not going to pay any attention to anything that old fraud says, which, of course, that builds on Hermione's, for the lack of a better word, hatred of divination and how she continues to look down on the art of divination and even Professor Trelawney herself. You know, that speaks a lot to her decision-making process as it relates to this. But then Harry says to her, "You weren't there," said Harry. "You didn't hear her. This time was different. I told you. She went into a trance, like a real one. And she said the Dark Lord would rise again, greater and more terrible than before, and he'd manage it because his servant was going to go back to him. And that night, Wormtail escaped.
Yeah.
So, do you think...
Hashtag facts.
Do you think Hermione is somewhat giving in to divination now after this, or is she still...
No, she just changes the subject. Why were you asking if Hedwig can come, Harry?
Good point, good point.
Just switches it around. I don't want to talk about this anymore, so we're just going to switch around and talk about other things.
And then Ron's like, hey, you know what, guys? Let's just go have some Quidditch.
Ron does what Ron does best.
He really is a Hufflepuff at heart. He really is.
Yeah, he's a Gryffindor.
He's a Gryffindor. Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
And
bless his sweet little heart.
And then Ron said, Hermione, in an I don't think you're being very sensitive sort of voice, Harry doesn't want to play Quidditch right now. He's worried and he's tired. We all need to go to bed. Yeah, I want to play Quidditch, said Harry. Hang on, I'll get my fireball. Hermione left the room muttering something that sounded very much like boys. This is awesome. Because it tells you so much about Ron and Harry and how they are, in fact, on the same page a lot. And Hermione is on the same page with the other two. They are our main trio. They are the power trio of this story.
But Ron lets Harry just be a boy sometimes.
Yes, Hermione is too focused. I don't want to say on being maternal because I don't think that's the right word. But she is too focused on the things that matter to her most. Yeah. And that's not a bad thing, by the way.
And the big deal stuff. You know, she would probably love to dive deep into what does all this mean? Why were the Death Eaters here? Let's really, like,
absolutely,
go scene by scene of your dream. And Ron realizes his friend's tapped out. He's tired. He's kind of freaking out.
It kind of flows back to the whole thing of avoidance a little bit because Harry is choosing to do the avoidance here as he was with Hermione.
It's like Ron's MO.
Yeah, Ron is a total avoidance king. And like, you know, like when I remember in college when I was stressing out about my thesis and my finals and my best friend, John, I know he's not listening, but John, I love you. John came up to me and said, Blake, that's it. We're going. We're leaving. And I'm sitting there freaking out, sweating, shaking, like get all of these things. He's like, we're getting out of here. We're going to go grab a drink and then we're going to go to the batting cages and hit some balls because that's what I needed. And that's what boys do. And
not just boys, it's what sometimes people do.
That's what, you know.
Peeps.
Well, whatevs, you know, like, it's just that's what I needed at the time.
Yeah.
What Harry needs right now is a good game of Quidditch. Good game of Quidditch. Oh, by the way, we got our first mention of Mundungus Fletcher.
Hey.
In this.
This isn't our first mention of him, but in
is
this
it?
Book. No, he was mentioned once before. I think he was trying to, like, do something with Arthur Weasley, because I'd written it down. I was like, we definitely had talked about him a moment before. He was tried to hex Mr. Weasley during a ministry raid. So, Chamber of Secrets, he was mentioned there. We're going to, of course, be spending a lot more time. Not a lot more time, but we're going to be spending some more time with Mundungus forward.
By the way, I just want to say this, too, because the Chamber
just
of Secrets.
Just not an upstanding guy.
Chamber of Secrets reminds me. If Ron and Harry had just listened to Hermione in the Chamber of Secrets, that book would have been half as long. The story would have been half as long because Hermione had it all figured out. So just because I'm saying that she's only worried about the things that she's only worried about doesn't necessarily mean that's a bad thing. It just means that she's not focused more on the friendship aspect as opposed to the fixing and facts and the reality of the situation, like as she is wont to do. That's my point.
So we wake up the next day. Everybody gets to have a little sleepy time, and the younger kids are all getting ready for Hogwarts. You know, whether it's delving into their new books, shining up a firebolt, looking at all the things that Mrs. Weasley purchased in Diagon Alley, and Fred and George, of course, are up to a little wee bit of mischief that Molly's trying to figure out, and they play her back. You know what I mean? She's like, oh, what are you doing? You're not doing your business again, right? And they're like, Mom, really? If we die on the Hogwarts Express, is that honestly how you want to end things with us after what you felt yesterday?
That is so special, too. And that's what makes the twins awesome, because they can take that little bit of sense of humor and turn something that... Again, I still don't appreciate Molly's take on Weasley's Wizarding Wheezes. Mm-hmm. I just I don't like this.
Kids, and she's just not.
I just don't like it. I this doesn't feel like a Molly thing to me. But I mean, I get it. I understand.
I see it as, what have these kids done at home that she has had to clean up all this years? Yeah, like we're just meeting Fred and George through Harry's eyes. But I feel like Fred and George have pulled pranks, have hurt their siblings, have blown up half the house, have like blown up the cat. I don't know. I feel like they have done naughty stuff their entire life, and she has had to clean up after them.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just fed up.
She's like, just done.
I just want you to get your owl so you can get a job and move out. And then I can see you and like you on Christmas and not have to worry, did you, you know, blow up the Christmas pudding, you know, because you thought it'd be funny. Like, I think that these boys, think back to your younger years, the class clowns, when they were trying to nail their jokes or trying just to like steal the attention. They often messed up.
Right.
And they often did bad things, you know, and maybe they turned out to be fun people when they grew up. But Molly's had to deal with these guys all these years. And there's two of them.
Well, I love how this interaction is written later on here. She says, eight of the hands were currently pointing at the home position, but Mr. Weasley's, which was the longest, was still pointing at work. Mrs. Weasley sighed. Your father had to go off into the office the weekend since the days of you-know-who, she said. So I love how that this sets up a tone for the rest of this book. From now on, you know that whatever is happening right now is as serious, get it, serious, as it was for the ministry, at the very least, as it was when you-know-who, when Voldemort was around. At this moment, we get a larger perspective over what is happening. This is intense, and it's so intense that it reminds Molly of when it was, when mm-hmm. Voldemort was in power. They're working for him far too hard. His dinner is going to be ruined if he doesn't come home soon. Well, Father feels he's going to make up for his mistake at the match, doesn't he? Said Percy. If truth be told, he was a tad unwise to make a public statement without clearing it with the head of the department first. Don't you dare blame your father for what that wretched Skeeter woman wrote, said Mrs. Leasley, flaring up at once. Well, if Dad hadn't said anything, old Rita would have said it was disgraceful and nobody would from the ministry would have commented, said Bill, who was playing chess with Ron. Rita Aww. Skeeter never makes anyone look good. Remember, she interviewed all the Gringotts curse breakers once and called me a long-haired pillock? Well, it is a bit long, dear, said Mrs. Weasley gently. If you just let me... No, Mom. Rain lashed against the living room window. Hermione was immersed in the standard book of spells grade 4, copies of which Mrs. Weasley had bought for her. Harry and Ron in Diagon Alley, but he was polishing his firebolt. The broomstick servicing kit Hermione had given him for his 13th birthday open at his feet. Fred and George were sitting far in a corner, quills out, talking in whispers, their heads bent over a piece of parchment. I really love how all of this is written, and I know I just read a lot there, but you get the sense of family. You get a sense of the borough itself, how it is placed out. Bill is actually, he's not just there. He's interacting.
He's playing chess.
He's playing chess with Ron.
Love
and we
it.
Know Ron's.
Loves chess.
We know how Ron is really good at chess, so you probably know it's a good match. And there is, and you get a sense of Bill's frustration with his mother, because it is the word no is italicized, and you know that this must be an ongoing conversation between the two. There's emphasis put on that. It's really
well written.
I've
said it a million times. Yeah. No,
like, and she probably has this kind of conversation with him about various things of his that he's just like, nah, Ma, I'm not doing it. So I just love how that is written. It's really spectacular.
I dig it. We go on and we learn more about Rita is poking her nose around everything in the ministry, including realizing that Bertha Jorkins is still missing. Still missing. And what I love is we've had just this little dripping of like, where's Bertha Jorkins? Someone who we don't know, whose name really doesn't mean too much to us. When it's first dropped in the beginning of the book, it doesn't really mean anything. But now we've read it three or four times. And really it's being pounded. Like, she has been missing. We need to figure this out. Granted, it's still within the same week. Mm-hmm. Okay. Even though we're here at chapter 10, which oftentimes in Harry Potter could be like a whole season, many months span, it still has been a very, very short period of time. And we're not even at Hogwarts yet. I mean, Let's just take a look at
where
we are in this book.
In my book, we're 105 pages in right now.
Yeah. I'm 154. And it's like, we're not even on the Hogwarts Express.
Right.
And Bertha Jorkins has made this big of an impact within about a week's worth of time. So we've got Bertha Jorkins still being mentioned. And then also, you know, Percy goes on to say, well, it's lucky she didn't find out about Winky. And we go into this kind of volley between Percy and Hermione, who usually see eye to eye. Hermione.
Because they're both Ravengriffs or Griffin claws.
Yeah, they're both quite smart. They take their studies seriously. They take, you know, being proud of their work and they following the rules to a T. And yet they get into this volley, as I said, because Hermione is really starting to feel strongly that house elves are a form of slavery.
Yeah, it even says, his slave, you mean, said Hermione, her voice rising shrilly. Because he didn't pay Winky, did he? In that descriptor right there, her voice raising shrilly. We all know what shrill sounds like.
Yeah.
And that is not good. And then Arthur says, Mrs. Weasley says, you know what, everybody, go upstairs. Just go upstairs. Come on now. All of you, just get up there. Make sure you're packed. And there is some more great writing from the author, more scene setting that is really specifically special to Harry Potter and that wouldn't work in any other story, I don't think. Harry repacked his broomstick surfacing kit, put his firebolt over his shoulder, and went back upstairs with Ron. The rain sounded even louder at the top of the house, accompanied by loud whistlings and moans from the wind, not to mention sporadic howls from the ghoul who lived in the attic. Pigwidgeon began twittering and zooming around his cage again when they entered. The sight of half-packed trunks seemed to have sent him into a frenzy of excitement. So many great things here, whether it is the broomstick repair servicing kit or how you can hear the rain hitting at the top of the house. When you're in your house and you're hearing it rain, you don't necessarily hear it hit the roof. You hear it outside the window, but that gives you a sense of how thin the roof might be at the Burrow.
You're
hearing the rain pitter-pattering against the thing. And then, of course, the ghoul. And then also Pigwidgeon. Pigwidgeon here is so important because he has a sense of...
Things are happening.
Half full trunks. I know what's going on.
Choo-choo.
You get a personality out of a freaking owl
in
this descriptor. This bit of writing here, too, is really excellent from the author.
Awesome. Harry expresses more of his concern that Sirius still hasn't written back, and here they are packing off to go to Hogwarts. And this, of course, is where we come across the beautifully comical dress robes.
So good.
The dress robes.
The whole thing is great.
You feel so badly because as the book describes and as we see in the movie, really Harry's more modern dress robes are just like fancy regular robes.
Right.
You know, it's like the equivalent of a tuxedo when normally you would wear a black suit.
Yes.
Honestly, you sit there and you're like, oh, poor Ron, he should have just worn his regular school robes instead of that like gross looking
maroon and doily looking frill pirate shirt.
I did miss the... Looks like my great aunt Tessie. Smells like my great aunt Tessie.
That's the question I have for you, Mary. Did you like this introduction to the dress robes better than the way that it occurs in the films? Or do you like the film version better?
I think here in the book, it serves the book's purpose because now here we are. Once again, we're still not even on the Hogwarts Express. There has been multiple mentions of Harry wishing he could give them money. Harry having more money than Ron and just kind of like reframing that for you to understand a little bit more because Ron's lack of wealth does bother him greatly.
Absolutely.
You know, it really impedes how he kind of functions within the school from time to time, whether it's having a broken wand or now having this poor dress robe. And it just makes him feel poorly. Like not even, you know, pun intended, but it just does. So you really feel for Ron.
He even says, why is everything I own rubbish?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's how he feels about Pigwidgeon. You know, there's many times when you look at Ron and you're like, Ron, come on, buck up or be stronger or be smarter. And he really does have this low self-esteem that he just feels like he can't bust out of.
Yeah.
And I loved that. So I did love that whole point. Like, fine, go naked. Like, Mrs. Weasley is just over.
Oh, she's an
over she's having an all 80s these kids
mom.
At home. Yeah.
She's an 80s mom to the best of her ability. It looks like our little lass is joining us. Little lass, would you like to say something to our audience?
She's just asking to watch TV.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. All right. So,
all right, my little lass. Well, we will watch TV in a minute. Can you go back over there in front?
After this.
after this.
Don't make any promises we can't keep.
Okay, fair enough.
You just go over there.
Go back over there.
We'll see. Okay. All right, let's wrap up this chapter. All right,
we're going to wrap it up. Anything else that you'd like to talk about, my darling?
That is it.
All right, you ready for the different perspective?
Sure.
All right, let's give it a shot, shall we? Here we go.
Holy cricket, you're Harry Potter. I'm Hermione Granger. And you are?
Molly Weasley.
Molly, it's been a while.
No, it hasn't. No, it hasn't. I was having like a lovely day yesterday shopping. And then the afternoon went kaputs.
I know.
Oh my gosh.
You saw the Mortal Peril thing, I bet, right?
Yeah, I thought I was going to spend the night in Diagon Alley. I thought I was going to, you know, just like sleep in a hotel, have the luscious sheets, just treat myself.
There was,
you know,
Egyptian cotton sheets at that hotel.
My goodness gracious.
It's like a kabillion thread count.
Yeah, they have these coupons for like moms, you know, moms doing the shopping or whatever.
Right.
And I spent a great day. Thank goodness I've got the arrangement at the bank where I can help Harry out.
Yeah, how'd you get that arrangement?
Hey, I'm Molly Weasley. My son works for the bank.
Yeah, I feel, you know what? A little bit of nepotism there, I'm feeling
like. What do you
mean? I'm feeling like you got a little bit of an inside job here.
Yeah. Hey, no,
how many bank accounts you got access to there, Molly?
Only three. Mine.
Yeah.
Harry's.
Uh-huh.
Hermione's.
Oh, Hermione's as well.
How do you think I bought her stuff?
I don't know.
Bippity boppity booed.
You know what I'm afraid of a little bit there, Molly?
No.
I'm afraid that you're...
Bippity boppity boo.
Yeah. I'm afraid that you're skimming off the top a little bit.
You don't know me.
You skim...
Listen,
who's going to say that you're not skimming?
Just because you're a Slytherin doesn't mean that's how I roll. Okay? And you don't want to mess with me right now because I have had a day. I have had a day.
Uh-huh.
I don't even care if my kids go to school naked at this point. I mean, honestly, at this point, get out and get somewhere where Albus Dumbledore can watch you. Because there's so many of them, I don't even know where they are. If it wasn't for my clock, I would not know which way was up or down. I don't know who's about to die, who's about to get pimples. Nothing without this clock.
All you know is that Bill's got to cut his hair. That's all you know.
You know, whatever. His spoon just says shabby, okay? 100% of the time says shabby. I've heard that these muggles have this like Apple Watch thing where it can tell time.
Yeah.
I'm honestly afraid to get one because I'm afraid it will mimic my clock. And then all I'm going to do is just see shabby, 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 mortal peril, shabby. I can't. I just can't take it anymore. I need these kids to go back to school. September 1st, you're here.
Go get the Egyptian cotton sheets.
Yes. End scene.
Oh, excellent stuff, Marvin. As always, bringing the heat on the different perspective. Now it is time for the emails and questions. Of course, we are taking emails at the moment, and we do have plenty. And if you want to get in touch with us...
I don't know if we can read plenty right now, as I have a little less on my lap, but we can tackle...
Okay, maybe we'll do one.
Okay.
How's that?
Yeah.
All right, we'll do one.
I don't know what plenty means. Plenty
well,
sounds
I think
like
we got,
five.
We got like three.
Okay. Let's do one right now, and then we'll do
we'll
the other ones.
We'll see how
we do. Unless it's chapter specific, yeah.
Okay.
I've just got a little lass on me who has, you know, a time limit, I think.
I understand. So if you want to send us an email and you want it read on the podcast, or you want a question answered from Mary or myself, you can do that. Just go to email us at maryandblakemedia@gmail.com. We will answer and we will definitely at least read your email and answer you back, if not on the podcast, in email form. All right, let's get to it, shall we?
Oh, Miles here.
All right, this one comes from Alexandra.
Hello.
She says, Dear Mary and Blake, hi. Since the start of COVID, I have listened to all of your podcasts, read the Harry Potter books at least five times over, and watched the movies more times than I can count. This has led me to be a little Harry Potter obsessed.
Hey, welcome to the club.
Despite my parents' complaints that I'm doing too much with Harry Potter, I still ask and visited Universal and are listening to your podcasts over again. Today, however, my question is, in your opinion, why was Harry not able to see Thestrals if he saw his parents die? So sad, by the way. Loving your Harry Potter podcasts. Hope to see you make more soon. Please do so. Love, Carla.
Okay.
Marvin, your thoughts.
So I have two options about it. Okay. One, he was in his crib and he may not actually have seen his parents die. You know, James was killed earlier in the house.
Yes.
And Lily was probably like near the doorway being like, no, no, get me instead of Harry. So Harry may not have actually seen them. My other theory is that Harry was just a one-year-old baby.
Too young to comprehend.
Exactly. Too young to actually realize this was death. And that's kind of one of the big things. The Thestrals... If you've seen death and you know what happened, then you kind of have to deal with that grief and
stuff. I think
stuff.
I think a knowledge of death has to be very specific.
Had it happened when he was four?
Different story. Yeah, different story.
Which, you know, Luna Lovegood loses her mother early on.
Right.
But not baby.
But she was old enough to understand the loss of her mother. Would you like to do the other two emails real quick?
We can try one more.
I will try one more. All right, here we go. This one comes from... Hold on. Oh, no. That was from Alexander. This one comes from Carla. Dear Mary and Blake, first of all, love, love, love everything that you do because of your podcast.
Thank you.
I am now rereading all of the Harry Potter books, even though I've done so dozens of times before. Your chapter-by-chapter discussion often gets me to think about the scenes in ways I had not yet considered before. Sometimes I agree. And sometimes I don't, but it's always fun and reminds me that there are so many different lenses through which to view a topic. I just listened to your recap of the Goblet of Fire Chapter 9, which was the Dark Mark, and I think you might have misremembered something. You talked about how the Ministry wasn't making a big deal about Barty Crouch Jr.'s escaping from Azkaban. That's because they were of the belief that he had died in Azkaban about a year after his imprisonment. In truth, hashtag spoiler alert, he and his father had faked his death and he was living at home. No one but Barty Crouch Sr. and Winky knew this. This all comes out at the end of the book. Anyway, I look forward to the next chapter with you. P.S. Blake, I hope your health is improving. Thank you very much, Carla. It is. We are still only doing things the way that we are for right now, but we are improving. And P.P.S. Mary, your different perspective performance as the Bulgarian Minister of Magic was the funniest thing I've heard in ages.
Aww,
thank you.
Thank you.
Love, Carla.
Thanks.
And I have one last one here if you want to get through with it.
Okay. We've got now two kids in here, so okay. I would suggest we wrap it up.
All right, let's wrap it up then. We'll close it out. John, I got your email. We will read it after.
Next time, John.
We'll read it next episode. All right, let's close it out.
Remember, friends, if you are a member at jointhenerdclan.com, Blake and I are eternally grateful to you. You know, here we are juggling our kids and podcasting at the same time in the midst of dealing with health issues of our own and life in general. And you are the ones that are making this possible. You're the ones that have allowed us to have me work from home solely so I can take care of these little wee cherubs while we run our media company and take care of our websites and the podcast fees. It would not be possible without your financial support. Honestly, we are pretty much the PBS of podcasts supported by listeners like you. So if you would like to help join the Nerd Clan, you can. Jointhenerdclan.com. You get all sorts of fun freebies and extras there from Blake and I. And we want to thank you so very much. On that note, my name is Mary Larson.
My name is Blake.
Mischief managed.
Everybody wave bye.
Bye.